The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone. I'm Sam Livingston. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. I'll be subbing in for your usual host today, Mr. Stephen Fleury. As he said a couple of weeks ago, he'll be having quite a few more subs as SEP, Summer Educational Program, is going on. I believe that's going well as far as we know over here in or at Edstone. I looked at the forecast today for Edmond, Oklahoma, and I just Googled that, and it came up and said it would be 36 degrees today, and that was the high in Edmond. So I thought maybe we're over praying for cool weather, because that's really cold. And then I forgot that the European Union takes control of my internet and changed the temperature to Celsius. So 36 degrees Celsius is about 97 degrees Fahrenheit. So that is pretty hot, so we can continue to pray for God to perform miracles with the weather over there for the campers. I thought I'd also mention that today is July 16th. That was always emphasized a lot when I was, well, we emphasize it every year, but I remember that date obviously always coming up during the youth camp during the summer when I was a camper. And again, that date is significant. That's when Mr. Stephen Fleury, he was 19 years old, he was unbaptized, and he read Malachi's message for the first time, and that represented that 3.5 years of rain being withheld. And I remember at camp, it was always emphasized how, look at what God does through young people, unbaptized 19-year-old. If you want more details on the significance of that date, and I just, again, wanted to draw your attention to it, because we do need to keep these important days in mind. There's a lot in the James booklet at our website that you can go through to read on that. I think there's 4 or 5 pages especially that highlight how critical and how important these days are for us to remember. Most of the program today is going to be a news blast. I'll be running through quite a few different stories. We'll look in depth a little more at one story in particular in the second half. I just thought I'd start today with President Trump's Twitter account. He tweeted about the National Association of Police Organizations endorsing him. I thought that was important. That's roughly 240,000 police officers. And again, it makes it obvious and clear that President Trump is the candidate for the rule of law, something that he stressed a lot in his press conference on Tuesday. So while the Democrats and Biden are talking about defunding the police, we've got, I think, might be the largest police union in America openly endorsing President Trump. The BBC over here in the United Kingdom, you might know this, but in the United Kingdom, you have to pay a license fee to watch television if you have cable news, and you pay that fee to the British Broadcasting Company or corporation. I can't remember what the C stands for, but that's government-run media. You have to pay an annual fee if you have cable. There are some caveats to getting around paying that fee. There's a growing movement here to stop that license fee. It's called Defund the BBC. As a result of some of this loss in funding, the BBC cut one of its most watched political programs, the Andrew Neil Show, and now they have created even less incentive to watch the BBC, let alone pay that annual fee for it each year. The Conservative government has been working to end that license fee. It's something like £180 a year. I haven't paid attention to it for a couple of years. I avoid cable just so I don't have to pay that. I used to get letters in the mail. It's something, I think it was £1,000 is the fine if you're caught using a device that has access to BBC iPlayer and you don't register to pay that license fee. So a lot of people are upset about that fee. So we'll see where that goes in the coming months. I think the biggest news this morning was the hack at Twitter. Yesterday, the most prominent figures on Twitter had their accounts hacked. The hacker posted a tweet asking for followers to give money to a Bitcoin account, and the post made it sound like this was the user's personal Bitcoin account. They rephrased the same message in different ways, so it shows that they had access to each of these accounts. Essentially said something to the effect of, due to COVID-19, I'm giving back to the community. Send me $1,000 in Bitcoin, and I will give you $2,000. Now, that post appeared on the Twitter feeds of the most prominent figures on Twitter. Barack Obama, these are just a few of them. Bill Gates, Elon Musk, Joe Biden, Warren Buffett, Kanye West, Michael Bloomberg, the official account for Apple, Uber, and Jeff Bezos. So I think if you use Bitcoin, it would be pretty obvious if you saw that that's a scam. I think most people that use Bitcoin would be savvy enough to see that that was a scam. So I'm not sure if they made any money from it. But obviously the significance of this is that the biggest names had their accounts accessed by this hacker, by a criminal. One name that doesn't appear on the list was President Trump. As far as we know, his account was not infiltrated. It's terrifying to think about how this could be used. Obviously, these individuals have a ton of influence. If you followed Tesla over the past year, I think most people that own stock in his company watch his Twitter handle very closely, because it's one tweet can set that stock up, or it can bring it right down. So it's really easy to manipulate emotions and markets with this sort of power. Now, I'm sure there's some sort of insurance mechanism set up for when this happens. They think of everything on Wall Street. But what if something happens that can't be undone? What if there's a lot of rage over the tweet, and we know how quickly things can be triggered these days? What if it incites a riot? What if someone gets into an account, posts something, and people take to the streets? It's frightening to think about what could happen. It's shocking to see how easily this happened to the big names, the names where you'd think there's overwhelming security and I don't know what all the terminology is, but protections set up in place to keep that from happening. So if it could happen to them, how easily can it happen to the average person? And as these stories come out, I think a lot more about what the church has said about social media and just measuring our use of the internet. Like I said, it's still unclear what exactly happened. I think Twitter was up, obviously, all night. They were posting apologies at 2, 3 a.m. trying to figure out what happened. It seems like, from what they've said, that the hackers got into Twitter rather than, obviously, going through each of these people's accounts. The Wall Street Journal said, "The attack, which security experts called the most significant hacking incident in Twitter's history, began before 4 p.m. Eastern Time, when compromised accounts, many of them related to the digital currency Bitcoin, began posting messages requesting money be sent to cryptocurrency accounts. The attacks quickly spread to additional, more prominent accounts, with the bogus messages sometimes receiving thousands of likes before they were taken down, only to be posted again a short time later, sometimes on the same account." So it took them a little while to get control of this situation. "The breadth of the attack," the Wall Street Journal writes, "and Twitter's struggle to bring it under control made it one of the most extensive security failures for Twitter, raising questions about a social platform that has attained a central place in political, cultural, and business communication. There are still many unanswered questions about the breach, said David Kennedy, chief executive of security consulting firm Trusted LLC. They still don't know the extent of the damage or the length of the attack or what system the hackers had access to, he said. Given the level of access the hackers apparently had, the hack could have given the attackers ability not only to post Twitter messages on these accounts, but also to access private direct messages sent and received by the account holders. Nothing is safe right now on Twitter, says David Kennedy. They don't know how far into these accounts they got. Obviously, if they're able to post something and make it appear as though that individual was posting it, that seems to be a pretty extensive invasion. I saw this headline on Reuters following along with these hacks and just the vulnerability of technology and social media. This article is titled "Deepfake Used to Attack Activist Couple." And these aren't necessarily videos, but these are accounts that look very real. I think normally these, if it's a bot or if it's a hacker, it'll have some funny tag name or it'll be a strange icon or image. But these accounts look very real. And the profile image for this one that Reuters writes about, it was a computer-generated image of a person's face. This individual does not exist anywhere. So it's a completely unique image. They create a unique profile for this person, and it appears very credible. And what, in this case, what this individual did was, whoever it was, they were writing smear articles about their political enemies. I think this happened in Israel. And they actually got a couple newspapers to publish their articles because it looked so real. And then the newspapers, they don't have the resources to, well, they really should, to go and vet this very extensively. But then the people who were the focus of this attack wanted to know what was going on here. And they find out, well, this is all fake. This account or this individual doesn't exist. None of these phone numbers actually work. They didn't go to this college. But the profile, the picture, all of it looks so credible. And obviously, this is a huge propaganda effort. It's frightening to consider that this person can just be created out of thin air. They can look real and they can write whatever they want. And you can smear whoever you want, and it's very difficult to find out whether or not these people exist. Moving on here, this article was pretty stunning. A few of us saw this yesterday. This is from The Federalist. Smithsonian pushes racist material claiming white culture is nuclear family self-reliance being polite. The National Museum of African American History and Culture is promoting material about whiteness and white culture on its website in an effort to discuss race equity and inclusion. Now, I forgot to bring the infographic. I was going to put it up on the screen, but it's an infographic, and it's titled Symbols or Evidence of Whiteness in America. And it's all of these positive, well, what you'd think were positive characteristics. One section said, you know, you're in a white country if being on time is heavily emphasized, or all of these traits that you'd think this is universal. Everyone needs to be on time. They need to get their work done on time. They need to show up to work. The nuclear family helps strengthen society. Well, this museum is saying, well, those are traits of a white culture. And it was really, you go through the list on there and they're all traits that you would want to emulate no matter what race you are. If you want to be successful, it looked like it was just an attack on the 7 laws of success and making it sound like, well, if you do these, you're celebrating white culture. Ben Shapiro wrote, It's not just crazy, it's evil and counterproductive. It suggests that all pathways to success, hard work, stable family structure, individual decision-making, represent complicity in white supremacy, which incentivizes all the paths to failure, of course. So if you do these positive things, you are embracing white culture, is the message. So what obviously then is the alternative? Well, don't do those things. Okay, and then when you fail, well, whose fault is it? Well, it's this racist society, of course. So you can't win. You can't keep up with all of these rules. When I saw that that infographic, it's just, it's insulting to everyone. And of course, they'll come up with some way to explain it. The intellectuals and the academics have no end to how they'll walk around these things and explain how it is actually, I can't even get my head around it. I won't even try to explain what they're going to say. The NBA was in the news. Once again, they're very active in their pursuits for social justice. This again comes from the Federalist. NBA bans custom jerseys with Free Hong Kong, but allows burn Jews and kill cops. So what you could do is you could go to the NBA's store and you could have a custom name put on the back of your jersey, not just a name or a phrase, anything you want, because the players are allowed to now put on their social justice slogans on the back of their jerseys. So they're allowing the fans to make their own jerseys. And I think this was someone that worked for Fox News, went to the website and typed in, okay, I want a jersey that says Free Hong Kong on the back. And the website would not allow that phrase to appear on the jersey. You could not buy a jersey with the customized slogan Free Hong Kong. And then they tried, okay, well, type in burn Jews. That's allowed. What about kill cops? That's allowed. Any other racist thing was allowed, but Free Hong Kong would not work. So Laura Ingraham had a segment and she had one of her staffers call them up and complain about this. And the employee said, well, it's because it's too many characters. Free Hong Kong is too many characters. And then she said, well, we tried a different phrase with the same number of characters and it worked just fine. They put a lot of pressure on them. And then eventually the NBA relented and somehow the website got fixed so that Free Hong Kong was allowed on the back of these jerseys. A few months ago, they were kicking fans out of stadiums for holding up posters saying Free Hong Kong. There was the whole scandal with the Houston Rockets where an employee there tweeted their support for Hong Kong, and then China went ballistic, stopped airing Houston Rockets games, put all of these deals in jeopardy. And then again, it was shocking how the NBA just bowed to anything that China wanted. They could not jeopardize that market. And they will do that. They will go to that extent to not offend China, even if it means sacrificing half of their American market, all to please China. They'll alienate, I think it would probably be more than half of their fans. I can't watch a lot of professional sports anymore because I just can't stomach it. It's hard to listen to all of these platitudes throughout the entire game when you want to be there to watch the sport. You want to be there to watch the best athletes play. Victor Davis Hanson appeared on Laura Ingraham's show on July 14th. Here's a clip from what he said on her show.
Yeah, well, the NBA is like the university. It's an institution that's gone too far and too long without scrutiny. And when people watch it, they either say they're either professional athletes and they're apolitical or they're political. But they can't be hypocritical in both. And what they want us to do is to think that they're edgy, they're woke, they're concerned about social justice. They're going to put these insignia or messaging on their jerseys, maybe kneel for the national anthem. And yet, the whole system is predicated on a $4 to $6 billion lucrative enterprise in China with a government that has destroyed democracy in Hong Kong, destroyed the indigenous culture of Tibet, destroyed basically Uyghur culture and a million people in re-education camps, culpable for 140,000 American deaths from COVID because of their laxity, and an international mercantile outlaw, and yet they're getting billions of dollars there. And the reason is, it gets even deeper, Laura. The reason they're going to China is they're losing market share here in the United States because they talk about diversity, 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 but they have 20 coaches, 30, and we only have about 8 are African American. We have about 2 owners that are black, and they talk to us about diversity, and yet 75% of the players are African American. They're not diverse either. You don't know which is more non-diverse, the owners and the coaches or the players. And yet they lecture their audience, we've got to be diverse, proportional representation, disparate impact. And they're not diverse. And so they've lost their audience. Asians, Latinos, whites are not tuning in to the NBA because they don't see it proportionally representative, as we're told it should be by the left, and therefore the NBA is kind of looking toward a foreign audience, a big audience, 1.6 billion, 5 billion people,
because
they cannot maintain interest in the United States because they're hypocritical.
I think people
are getting very tired of it.
People are getting very tired of it. It's that simple. You watch the sport because you want to watch the best athletes play that sport. And instead, what it's turning into is this just this religious festival almost, and how they have to take their knee before each game, and they have to wear the logos and the armbands, and it's sickening to watch almost. It's hard to watch anymore. I try to just watch summaries of the game, 2 or 3 minute summaries, because I don't think I could sit through and listen to those commercials and the commentators. They always have the little side stories between plays, and I suspect all of that these days probably has to do with social justice. But as Victor Davis Hanson says there, what hypocrites. They're pandering to China, and China does everything that they're claiming to stand against. I came across this article in my research. This was from February 29th, just 3 or 4 months ago. This was in the Washington Post. It's titled, China Compels Uyghurs to Work in Shoe Factory That Supplies Nike. Nike was, I think, they've donated more to the Black Lives Matter movement than any other company. They really have to work hard to preserve their brand and to bow to the mob, because they have quite a few scandals spanning decades. So they have to say whatever the mob wants them to say. If you remember the slogan they came out with a couple weeks ago, I think it was racism, for once, don't do it. Okay, and then we see this article, and all the pandering and all the talk about how evil slavery is, and how obviously how evil it is, but how wrong America is, and they will not condemn China. Again, this article is titled, China Compels Uyghurs to Work in Shoe Factory That Supplies Nike. The workers in standard issue blue jackets stitch and glue and press together about 8 million pairs of Nikes each year at this shoe company in China. A Nike supplier for more than 30 years and one of the American brand's largest factories. But hundreds of these workers did not choose to be here. They are ethnic Uyghurs from China's western Xinjiang region, sent here by local authorities in groups of 50 to toil far from home. Most of these are young women. They're not allowed to leave the city. They're heavily monitored. They're pulled away from their families to go and work in these shoe factories. Literally a forced labor camp. I can't get into how you make your shoe. That's your prerogative. But if you're going to lecture Americans and talk about how evil Americans are because they had slaves 200 years ago, when most people you meet, I would say all people in the United States today, you're not going to find a slave owner and you're not going to find a slave. This is 200 years ago. And Nike gets up there and they have to pander to the mob. They have to donate tens of millions of dollars to Black Lives Matter. and they lecture America about how righteous they are, but they don't go through the efforts. And it's not like this is, you know, they do have hundreds of factories around the world, but this is the Washington Post that published this. Do you know that you have slave laborers in your shoe factories? A nation of hypocrites. You can look at the latest Philadelphia Trumpet. It has that little infographic in there about all the companies donating to the Black Lives Matter movement. And Nike is at the top of the list there. I'd like to talk a little bit about bullying, and not in the traditional sense of the word. Well, it is the traditional sense, but we think of bullying as something that kids do on playgrounds. But a lot of these people in America, a lot of these individuals that are taking the knee, they're being bullied. A lot of these corporations that have to please the mob, they're being bullied. And they're being bullied by a movement that says it's the majority, that says it's righteous, that says it speaks for the masses, and they shame people. It's the cancel culture. This is what a quote from Mr. Gerald Flurry. This was in the July 27 Philadelphia Trumpet. He writes, "Today's educators ignore, erase, and rewrite history to suit their purposes. They move people to push aside facts and allow emotions, impressions, and feelings to determine what is true. This is the classic tool of dictators and tyrants. They bully people into accepting their truth, regardless of evidence and facts. They play on people's emotions. They stir crowds into irrational frenzy and inspire fanatical devotion to falsehood. They bully people into accepting their truth." This was 2017. This was, I guess you could argue, this was before the cancel culture movement, and everybody's getting canceled for something that they said or did 40 or 50 years ago. Corporations get canceled for something they did 300 years ago. Never mind all of the actions they took following those moments. Regardless of evidence and facts, they bully people into expecting their truth. And it started there in the colleges. We heard about it at the New York Times yesterday, and now it's becoming culture-wide. It's everywhere. People being bullied. And I think about how far ahead the Trumpet and the Plain Truth is on this. In those educational institutions, I think it was one of the first Plain Truth magazines, Mr. Armstrong had that cover produced of the students in the classroom with a funnel and the information just being poured into their heads. They're being told what to think, not how to think. And that was 70, 80 years ago. This church, the Trumpet, the Plain Truth, has been ahead of all of this. And now, finally, you see articles in the Wall Street Journal and maybe National Review talking about how we have to get academia under control. This is the source of all of it. Go and read what Mr. Armstrong was writing in the 30s and the 40s, 50s and 60s. He has been ahead of this for half a century or more. Another quote from Mr. Gerald Flurry. This is in the February 2016 Philadelphia Trumpet, and he's talking about this incident on a college campus and this individual who was trying to take a picture of a protest on a college campus. Mr. Flurry says, "Students and faculty shouted him down and shoved him away. They don't care about the First Amendment or freedom of the press. They are willing to use bully tactics and muscle to get rid of someone they don't like. They do not value freedom. In today's university, there is a demand for diversity, but a sameness in thinking. There is diversity in skin pigmentation, but conformity in reasoning. There is groupthink and intellectual intimidation, and more, there is aggression and hatred. This is the state of higher education in America today, and that higher education is bleeding out into the streets. It's bleeding out and dominating the culture." And those bullies are willing to do anything to get power. They're willing to use any tactic they need to get power. This is what Mr. Fleury wrote in the May-June 2018 Philadelphia Trumpet. This article that we quote often, Saving America from the Radical Left Temporarily. He writes, before the election in 2016, just about everyone believed Hillary Clinton would be the next president. If she had won, none of this corruption, talking about the spying by the Obama administration, none of that corruption would have come to light. We are getting a hard look at just what the radical left is willing to do in order to seize power and stay in power. They have no respect for the rule of law. They believe they are above the law. It is no exaggeration to say that such contempt for the nation's founding principles is a threat to the republic. We're getting a hard look at what they are willing to do in order to seize power and stay in power. I think of that when you watch the way the media or the way prominent Democrats talk about the rioting in the streets and how the lengths they go to justify it because it could damage President Trump. They are willing to watch cities burn if it means he could lose an election. They're willing to politicize coronavirus deaths if it makes President Trump look bad. There is no end to what they will do to get their way, to get power, even if it means people dying. And that is history right there, the way these movements operate. It's happened in the Soviet Union. It's happened in China. It's happened in Venezuela. Life becomes just an obstacle. And it might start with a statue now, but if you compromise there, they'll move on to, well, what was the ideology behind the statue? Are there people who still defend the statue? What about religion's role? This clip, we've referenced President Trump's July 3rd speech quite often on this show. This is a clip that we played part of, and then there's a second half here where President Trump talks about the power grab that the radicals are trying to make.
Their goal is not a better America. Their goal is to end America. In its place, they want power for themselves.
Their goal is to end America, and in its place, they want power for themselves. And they are bullying their way to getting that power. If you let the bully have his way, he's going to just keep taking more. Stand up for the truth. You don't have to go down and play by their rules or play by their tactics. Just stand up for the truth. You don't have to kneel to the mob. If you know the truth, stand up for it. And so many people are just kneeling to the mob, and it fuels them. It gives them more power. In the textbook that we use for international relations at the college, Politics Among Nations, Hans Morgenthau says, power may comprise anything that establishes and maintains the control of man over man. Thus, power covers all social relationships which serve that end, from physical violence to the most subtle psychological ties by which one mind controls another. The more people bow to the mob, the more powerful they get. They are able to control the way people think, and that is power. Now, I wanted to talk about that because I wanted to give context to this story that might not initially sound related, but it has been in the news quite a lot, and hopefully you won't laugh at me for getting into this story, but I want to talk about the Washington Redskins. And I want you to remember the context, those quotes that I just read, and how this latest story with the name change for the Washington Redskins plays into that. On Monday, the owner of the Redskins announced that the team would be retiring the nickname Redskins. Now, this has been a decades-long battle between a small group of activists who talk like they represent the majority and the football team, the Washington Redskins. And I'll try to say that as often as I can. Focused on a name that offended one or two people in the United States, and they attacked it relentlessly. And the point is, when you compromise a little bit, they will continue to take more. Because what they do, they take the moral high ground. You know, who would argue that a racial slur should be a team's nickname? So they polarize the argument. If you use that name, you are a racist. And then they tweet and they tweet and they tweet about it over and over again. They take the moral high ground and then they shame you into doing what they want. And if you give in, that gives them power. Because as we have seen over the last week, it doesn't stop with the Redskins. All of these people that did not care about sports 2-3 months ago suddenly are very invested in talking about how racist sports teams are. And it will not stop with the Redskins. I saw an article in the Washington Post again that the Texas Rangers need to change their name because of the racist past of the Texas Rangers from 150 or 200 years ago. And to demonstrate the power here, that they have the ability to control the way you think and speak, here's a montage that Grabian put together of media pundits who, I venture to say, don't care about sports until it comes to talking about racism. They will not even say the name Redskins.
Let's talk about this story that seems to not be going away. Washington's football team.
Well, let me start by saying I'm a Washingtonian, so I'm a lifelong fan of the Washington football team.
Today, he leaned even further into the culture wars, criticizing the Washington football team, which we will not name.
Tweeting about, you know, Bubba Wallace and the Washington football team.
Pressure mounting for the Washington football team to change its name.
Long past time for the Washington football team to change its name.
There is something happening across the country, Allison. You look at the Washington football team.
The Washington football team.
Washington football team.
Washington football team.
Washington football team.
The Washington football team.
Now, we should say we reached out to the NFL, to Nike, to the Washington football team.
I can't wait to sing Hail to the whatever it is.
The Warriors. The
exactly. There can be
There's so many options.
So many options. Yeah. The bullets are off the table.
We do better when we know better. And in 2020, I think we all know that groups of people should not be mascots.
Groups of people should not be mascots. One of my favorite in there was the guy who said, I've been a Washington football team fan my entire life. I want to ask him if he's gone, however old he is, 35, 40 years, and he's never said Redskins. He's always referred to them as the Washington football team, apparently. Now, it's a free country. You can say what you want. They'll argue. No one forces them to watch football. Probably most of them don't care about the sport until it comes to how racist it is. And same with NASCAR. No one talked about NASCAR 2 months ago. And then you have this social revolution, and suddenly that's getting coverage on MSNBC and CNN because of how racist, of course, the sport must be. But look at the power. Look at how this idea is introduced, a name that's been around since 1933. And they have gotten people to change the way they speak and think. I want to call them out on a technicality too, because if they're going to call them the Washington football team, they need to really call them the Maryland football team, because their stadium is not located in Washington. They play in Maryland. So it should be the Maryland football team. They need to get that right. How did the Redskins name change happen? The owner bowed to the mob after years of fighting against them. He pledged he would not change the name. Now, this name has been around for 87 years. The team originally played in Boston, and they chose the name Redskins to honor one of the coaches on the team who was an Indian. And it was not offensive. It was something to honor that man. Now, what they will say now is that this is a racial slur. The name needs to be changed. They claim to speak for the majority. And really what this is a small minority telling you what you're supposed to think. This is the Washington Post in 2002. They're getting a lot of airtime today. It seems like every article I have here is from the Washington Post. About as mainstream as you're going to get. This is 2002. American Indians among admirers of Redskins' name. The name changers appear to have the upper hand as they sweep the nation, forcing high schools and colleges to abandon traditional mascots and scrap names such as Indians, Chiefs, Braves, and Warriors. Even Warriors is racist. So there's a couple more teams in professional sports that will need to adjust. I think in that montage we played, they even suggested the Redskins change their name to the Warriors. He's not very woke. Interestingly, the Washington Post goes on, most of the people who sizzle with outrage over Indian team names and mascots are not Indians. Now, this movement didn't have a lot of traction. In Illinois, where I grew up, virtually every team name is some relation to Indians. Every town name in the area I lived is named after a Native American. At the University of Illinois, their mascot is a chief. It's the Fighting Illini. Let's move ahead now to the Washington Post again. This is in 2016, just 4 years ago. Totally different world. This article is titled, New Poll Finds 9 in 10 Native Americans Aren't Offended by Redskins' Name. Among the Native Americans reached over a five-month period ending in April of that year, more than 7 in 10 said they did not feel the word redskin was disrespectful to Indians. An even higher number, 8 in 10, said they would not be offended if a non-Native called them that name. Now, that survey, the owner used that and said, look, this just bolsters my argument. We don't need to change the name. It's not offensive. You're the ones saying that it's offensive, and you're not even Native Americans. Since the nearly half-century-old debate regained national attention in 2013, opponents of the name have won a string of high-profile victories, garnering support from President Obama, 50 Democratic U.S. senators, dozens of sports broadcasters and columnists, several newspaper editorial boards, including the Washington Post, a civil rights organization that works closely with the National Football League, and tribal leaders throughout Indian country. So there's the vast majority, and what we'll learn as we go through this article is that they represent a small minority, but at the top of society, and they have decided that after 87 years, this team name is racist and needs to go. Activists argue that the billionaire owner must act if even a small minority of Indians are insulted by the term. But for more than a decade, no one has measured what the country's 5.4 million Native Americans think about the controversy. Their response to the Post poll were unambiguous. Few object to the name, and some voiced admiration. So what about the few that are proud of the name? We have to change it because of the one or two that are offended by it? What about the one or two that admire it? What about the vast majority who are indifferent? They interviewed quite a few Native Americans for this article, again, from 2016. They found that quite a few Native Americans like the name because it offers them some measure of attention in a society where they are seldom represented. Even as the name change movement gained momentum among influential people, the Post survey and more than two dozen subsequent interviews make clear that the effort failed to have anywhere near the same impact on Indians. It was this huge activist-led campaign to change the name, and Native Americans are indifferent. They give a slew of stats here, and they get as specific as citing the Native Americans who are supposed to be the enlightened Native Americans, according to this article. Across every demographic group, the vast majority of Native Americans say the team's name does not offend them, including 80% who identify as politically liberal. So 80% of liberal Indians say no problem. 85% of college graduates don't have a problem with it. 90% of those enrolled in a tribe don't have a problem with it. 90% of non-football fans don't have a problem with it. And 91% of those between the ages of 18 and 39. The Washington Post says the general public appears to object more strongly to the name than Indians do. So the public is offended for people who are not offended. And I'm just making that point that you have this small group of people that bullies their way into power. A couple quotes here from the Native Americans that they interviewed. One says, "I really don't mind it. I like the name. We call other natives skins too." Another says, "The name is nothing to me." Another says, "For me, it doesn't make any difference." Those interviewed highlighted again and again other challenges to their communities that they consider much more urgent than an NFL team's name: substandard schools, substance abuse, and unemployment. So all of the United States right now, mainstream media is up to their eyeballs in this this racist name, Redskins, and how this is the path forward to diversity and enlightenment and raising the Native American population out of the reservations and the poverty they're experiencing. They're leading the cause to do this. And then the vast majority of the Native Americans say, what does changing a football team have to do with any of this? It is a brownie point to tick off the list to say that you care about this cause. And it's this ethereal topic where they argue if we just change the name, that will open the floodgates. And then Native Americans will be able to be proud of being Native Americans. And then that means they'll succeed. And then they're sitting over there saying, we have schools that are decaying. We have a problem with substance abuse and mass unemployment. If you care about us, come help us take care of these issues. We do not care what that team in the NFL is called. And then the loudest proponents or opponents of the name, Harry Reid, looked into him. He's not Native American. Democrat Representative Betty McCollum, also not Native American. NBC broadcaster Bob Costas, not Native American. Virginia Governor Terry McAuliffe, not Native American. The mayor of Washington, D.C., Muriel Bowser, she's black, but still not Native American. So those are all the opponents to the name. They want the name changed. Now, again, I'll just conclude with one more quote from this Post article. She views it, this is another Native American that they're quoting, she views it much the same way that many activists do. They argue that the central problems ravaging Native communities, poverty, violence, and addiction, this is someone who wants the name to be changed, and this is how she explains it will help. They argue that the central problems ravaging Native communities, poverty, violence, and addiction, can only be fixed if young people take pride in who they are. And having a football team named the Redskins causes them to not have pride in who they are. So that explains why there is poverty and violence and addiction. And if we can change the name Redskins, we can solve all of their problems. This is from the Washington Post just a couple days ago. Again from the Post. Washington's NFL team to retire Redskins' name following sponsor pressure and calls for change. Now, finally, this gets moved forward. This, like I said, has been a battle going on for decades between the minority activists, the small group of activists, and the owner, Daniel Snyder. So he has finally bent to the pressure and says that they will retire the name. How did he finally do it? Well, it came through corporate activism. This is the Post saying, on July 2nd, FedEx, one of the franchise's top sponsors and the holder of its stadium naming rights, released a statement asking the team to change its name. It also sent a letter to team lawyers saying it would terminate the naming rights deal and not pay the contract's remaining $45 million if Snyder did not change the team name. Other sponsors, including Pepsi, Nike, Bank of America, all made similar demands. So the corporations, they get bullied because the Twitter mob says, we're going to ruin your brand name by saying terrible things about you on Twitter unless you do exactly what we say. Nike, they're in there, the slave owners. And if you don't do what we say, which we want you to change the Redskins' name, we will shame you. This is what Washington, D.C.'s congresswoman said. I think we owe a lot to FedEx and Pepsi and Bank of America and the rest of the sponsors who sent a message cloaked in dollars and cents that the owner had to do this. Let's not kid ourselves. Money talks at the end of the day. That is what the president of this social justice organization said. His organization has lobbied for the Redskins to change their names over a number of years. Our efforts had an effect. So this is this activist group going after the Redskins sponsors. Our efforts have had an effect on FedEx, Nike, Pepsi, and some of the minority shareholders. Having acknowledged that, we will take the congrats and revel in the change with more to come. This activist added, Snyder, the owner, is being forced to do it, but we will still take it. They're not happy that he still thinks the name should stay. They want his thinking to change. But at least they were able to use the money to get their way. They're upset that he still does not think the way that they do. And now that the name is changed, here comes the 1984 rewrite history process. The Post says name changes are complicated processes, and Washington faces a serious challenge in instituting the name before September 13th, the opening game against Philadelphia. In addition to making new helmets and uniforms, it must pull the word Redskins from signs at the team's practice facilities and around FedEx Field. A media guide, about to go to the printers, must have the old name removed from 500 pages of type. Even the official club address, 21300 Redskins Park Drive, has to be altered. Erase this name from history. It has to be pulled down everywhere. Change the street names if you have to. The Washington congresswoman said, we're going through something of a peaceful revolution. We owe that to the tragic death of George Floyd. Out of that death has come a reexamination of everything, including names that many of us have long tried to get changed and now are forcing the owner to change. Now, again, in the grand scheme of things, it might not be the biggest deal in the world to change the name of the organization. Plenty of teams change their names for a variety of reasons. But again, it's an illustration of how these activists will bully their way to getting what they want. And I suspect if the owner probably took a stand again and said, no, we're not doing it, people would probably forget in 2 or 3 weeks like they usually do. But these are unusual times. And I wanted to conclude, or I will conclude, with a quote from the Overcomer booklet. And it's about how the devil, and he is the ultimate bully. Everything that is wrong, every bad quality, he is the pinnacle of that bad quality. He is a bully, and he forces you to obey him. He will tease you, and he will shame you. He will use whatever he can, and weaponize that against you to force you to do what he wants. Stand up to bullies. Stand your ground. If you know the truth, don't compromise. This is what Mr. Fleury wrote. He said, God never forces you into this at all. He asks you to voluntarily get behind it, being led by the Holy Spirit and using that Spirit. God is love. Satan is hate. He forces people to worship his way because in a lot of cases they won't do it unless they are forced. And we're seeing the mob, we are seeing the rule of these bullies, and they are getting their power. They are changing the way people think and speak. That War of the Wills chapter, it's not a very long chapter if you have the time to go through it. I think it helps explain a lot of the craziness that we're seeing in this world, a lot of the radical ideas that, like I mentioned at the start of the show, that don't make any sense, that you can't get your head around. It is will worship. You have to do it because they say to do it. That chapter will help you understand this present evil world better than anything you'll read on any other news website. Well, that is all that I have time for on today's show. Mr. Stephen Fleury will be back tomorrow. Thank you for listening. If you have any thoughts or comments for the show, you can email those to td@kpcg.fm. Thanks for joining us.